I'm going to be standing there going, this is the last thing in the world I want to do. My heart's racing. My blood pressure's going up. I'm getting all sweaty. It's adrenaline.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok. My guest today is Peter George. Here's three facts that I think you should know about Peter. One, throughout his childhood, Peter dealt with a lisp and a stutter. As a result, he grew up shy and introverted, avoiding communicating with others as much as possible. Two, over the past 17 years, Peter has helped professionals from around the corner to those in Fortune 100 companies develop into speakers who understand how to craft and deliver presentations that engage, persuade, and inspire, ultimately helping them increase their impact, influence, and income. I like that last bit. And three, Peter is the host, and here's Peter's actually an author and a podcast host. Peter's the host of the Public Speaking with Peter George podcast, and he is the author of the Captivating Public Speaker. There we are, Captivating Public Speaker. Engage, impact, and inspire your audience every time. Peter George, welcome to Your Intended Message.
George, it's a pleasure to be here.
Delighted to be talking with you, and I know we have some common understandings and appreciation of the challenge of public speaking, both the challenge and the thrill and the triumph. And one of the common challenges when it comes to public speaking is what people refer to as the fear of public speaking. And as someone who started out with a lisp and a stutter, two additional challenges, I imagine you probably avoided public speaking as much as possible while you were growing up.
At all cost. The only time I would really speak, I was involved in sports. So during the game, I would speak, I would talk about music. And then as I got older, I found out I could also talk about business. So music, sports, and business, I really wouldn't stutter that much. But if I talked about anything personal, something that meant something to me, even schoolwork, achieving at school, I would stutter quite a lot.
Why do you think that was?
I don't know. I never knew what was called therapy back then. They would never do now. I referred to my therapist that I visited every Tuesday morning in school for the first hour of school. I called her Cruella de Vil. But it worked. Ultimately, it worked. But I spent many a Tuesday morning in tears. So it was tough, but I eventually got beyond it.
And not everyone... I imagine not everyone needs to go through therapy with Cruella and tears every Tuesday morning. When you work with people and you help them address the fear of public speaking, where do you start?
Addressing why we have this fear. First of all, I don't believe there is such a thing. And I say that sort of tongue-in-cheek, but if we look at why we get nervous about speaking, it's adrenaline. Our adrenaline's flowing. So, George, let's say you and I are going to an amusement park and you love roller coasters. And this amusement park has a brand new roller coaster. It does all these flips and you're hanging from the top and everything else. And I'm looking at the line and looking at the roller coaster going, I don't think so. You and I are probably feeling the same thing. You're getting an adrenaline rush, and that's what you consider it. This is going to be great. my heart's beating, my blood pressure's up, I'm getting sweaty, I'm so excited to get on this roller coaster. I'm going to be standing there going, this is the last thing in the world I want to do. My heart's racing, my blood pressure's going up, I'm getting all sweaty. It's adrenaline. Now, how we label it might be different. And that's just one aspect of it. But a lot of us are afraid of public speaking, if you will, because we don't want to make fools out of ourselves. We don't want to be embarrassed. And I certainly get that. Or we know that we're not sufficiently prepared, or we don't know how to prepare. So all these things make us nervous, as they should. If you don't know how to do something, and then you have to go do it in front of other people, it would be me going to Yankee Stadium, having never faced a 90-mile-an-hour fastball before, 50,000 people in the stands, and I'm at home plate. What are the odds I'm going to hit this ball? Slim to none, and I know that. So I would be nervous up there that I'm going to make a fool out of myself. This might be making it very light, but that's really what it comes down to. And the idea that public speaking is the greatest fear known to humanity, I don't agree with that either. If you look at studies, it's well behind spiders, snakes, even clowns. So, and I'm one who's petrified of clowns, by the way. So I'll take public speaking over clowns any day. So there's a lot that goes into it. And once we perpetuate this idea, if not a myth, that public speaking is the greatest fear in the world, people buy into it. And that builds up their fear even more, or their nervousness.
Now, Peter, that's an intriguing point, that we hear the rumors, we hear the stories, we even read it in print about public speaking being the greatest fear. Therefore, we automatically believe it because we feel some anxiety. Therefore, oh, it is the greatest fear. I have the greatest fear. And how do we flip it?
I believe confidence comes from competence. So as you become more competent in something, you'll have the confidence to do it. Some people will say, just get up there and speak and speak and speak. Well, you might embarrass yourself if that's all you do. If you're not prepared and have some semblance of how you want to accomplish this. But if you can get up there and speak and you know how you want to go about it, you have some idea, then that repetitiveness, the competence that you gain through all this will give you that confidence. George, my favorite thing when I'm working with a client is not that they get this skill in public speaking, which they do, and I mean, that's what we're there for. But at some point, I see a light bulb go off over their head where they gain a level of confidence that they didn't know they could attain. And that's pretty cool, because that will not only be great in public speaking, that'll permeate their lives in other ways. So we're there for public speaking skills, but that level of confidence that comes along with it, I don't think anything beats that.
Confidence isn't a switch, I'm guessing. It's not an on or off switch. What is it really?
I think it's a learning process. When you learn not just the skills, but when you learn that you can accomplish something, the confidence starts to grow. And as you can build on that, just like any other building block, when you build on that, then at some point you reach that level and realize, wow, I can do this. It's also, I believe, knowing that you don't have to be perfect. That the presentation doesn't have to be perfect. You don't have to be perfect. And you can still be skillful.
And, you know, I find that curious, Peter, because people sometimes say to me, how can I deliver a perfect presentation? And I don't think it exists.
Not only in your dreams. Go to bed, have a nice night's sleep, dream of a perfect presentation. It's the only place you're going to see it.
And if people perhaps took some of that pressure off themselves to be perfect, they might feel better about themselves and hence more confident. And if they feel better, they'll probably do a better job.
I agree with you 100%, George. If if we're putting that onus on ourselves, and this is a big problem I think we have, I have to be perfect. I can't make a mistake. I don't want to embarrass myself. It's I, me. And that's not where the focus should be. I think, metaphorically speaking, it's funny that we put the spotlight on the speaker and the audience in the dark.
Mm.
So again, metaphorically speaking, I think it should be reversed. So it's all about the audience. Don't put all that weight on your shoulders. Who can bear all that weight? It's about the audience. You're there to serve and help the audience, transition them, transform them from being where they are to where you want them to go or where they want to go. There's a transformation taken there. When you concentrate on that, how can you help people wrong or incorrectly?
And I see an analogy there, Peter, with a chef, say, a restaurant chef who in one case is got an ego and wants to create this great masterpiece versus a chef who wants to delight their customers.
Ooh, I like that. I like that a lot. I actually take much of my life was built around things I learned from my dad. My dad was a firefighter. And I was once going to write a book, although I could never get through it. It was too difficult actually for me because my dad passed when I was 30. He was only 59. And it was business lessons from a firefighter. Now, my father knew nothing about business, but he taught me a great deal. A lot of it was during sports. He was both my hockey coach and my baseball coach at one time or another. And a lot of it was about sports, but you could put it into the aspect of life. And when he would talk about saving people, and he had 6 commendations over his firefighting career of saving people, literally saving them. And he would say things like, you don't have to be perfect when you're saving a life. Everything doesn't have to be perfect. You just have to save the life. You know, things like that. I know I'm going off of my dad a little bit here, but he said to me once, I was complaining to him early in my career. I stopped by my parents' house and I was complaining to him that because of this blizzard in Minneapolis, only 2 people showed up. There were supposed to be hundreds. 2 people showed up, and he looked at me, he says, you know, when that alarm goes off, we never ask how many people are in the house to decide if we're going to go or not. We just go and do our job. I'm like, ah, okay. So I learned a lot of lessons speaking business and in life just from his little, and back then I'm like, yeah, okay, Dad.
And Peter, that is a wonderful illustration of how we can take lessons from places we never would have imagined. Like, who would have thought business lessons, life lessons from a firefighter?
All right. Yeah, you just have to find out how they apply to what you're going through.
Mm-hmm. And relating that to public speaking, because you raised an idea here. Part of public speaking is getting across, reaching people with your message in ways that they hadn't considered.
That's a great way to do it because that piques interest. It's memorable. It's engaging. You know, a lot of people, when they're thinking about, again, they're putting the onus on themselves. I'll tell my clients, if I'm speaking somewhere, I'll tell them the story about my great-grandmother. It's another story of a relative. My grandparents and great-grandparents were from Maine, out in the sticks. And we would visit them every summer because that's where my mom was from. And we'd go up and visit her family. Well, every 5 years, we would have a family reunion. And there would be 200, 300, 350 people at this family reunion because there's nothing to do up there but make more cousins. So my great-grandmother, who lived to be just shy of 100, she died when I was 18. So I got to know her fairly well. And I was very lucky in that way. But during these family reunions, she would take all her grandkids, whether it was 10, 12, 15 of us, aside, away from the rest of the adults, and tell us one line, just one line. And then she would walk away, never explaining the line. And when I was about 12, she said to me, said to all of us, it was probably 15 of us, she said, if they look that close, slap their face. Now, this was a Bible reading country girl. And I'm a 12-year-old boy going, what does that mean? And I ran up to her and I said, Graham, what does that mean? She said, think about it. I thought about that for the longest time, could never figure it out. Got a little older and I said, oh, here's this Bible reading country girl. She was probably talking to the girls, her great grandchildren who were girls, that you're going to get interested in boys. And if the boys get a little too familiar, slap them. But when I got even older and really got into business right after college, I was starting to think, you know, if someone criticizes you, not critique you, that's different. But if they criticize you, then metaphorically slap their face. Who cares? That's their problem, not yours. So I took that as well. And that's one of the things I want people who are nervous about speaking. I know it's just a little anecdote, but understand that if you are totally prepared, you know the point you want to make, and you go out and do your best, and that includes doing the things beforehand, rehearsing and the like, and do your best to deliver it, anybody who criticizes you, the heck with them. You can only do the best you can do.
And maybe a good mantra to keep in mind when people are speaking, to heck with them. You don't like it, to heck with you. And Peter, I'm also wondering, I noticed when you started telling us those two stories of, about your family, but about first about your dad, the firefighter, and then your great grandma. Might that be a technique that a person can use when they're delivering a speech or a presentation by bringing in a personal or a family story, because that will automatically make them feel good because they're talking about something that they care about?
That's great insight. I don't know if I even looked at it that way before, but yeah, because stories, whether it's an anecdote or a true story, the difference is stories truly have conflict in them, or generally do, where anecdotes generally won't. But either one, when you tell those, they're easy to tell because you lived them. And you don't have to remember them or repeat them perfectly. And you can bring them alive, especially stories, bring them alive. But you'll feel comfortable telling them because they're yours. Now, sometimes I'll actually even tell stories and make them about someone else, because especially if I'm speaking for like 60 minutes and I have a few stories, I don't want everything to be about me. And if it doesn't make a difference whether it was or wasn't about me, like with my father and my grandmother, my great grandmother, yeah, those were about me and had to be put that way. But I can tell stories that might have happened to me and say, so this guy, you know, Jim, and tell the story that way. So it's not about me again. But I know that story. I can tell that story. If that story should only be told if it has a point to what's being talked about or the resolution of this whole meeting, then that's going to be remembered. And that's what's great about stories. George, you and I are not young. We're not spring chickens.
You'll find out.
Yeah. But I bet you we can take a pretty good shot at the Three Little Pigs or other fairy tales or other stories we heard when we were children. Or we might have even read to our children or maybe even grandchildren, but we still might not have heard them in years. We can take a pretty good shot at them. People remember stories. So when you do get nervous about public speaking, if you can come up with stories or anecdotes that make a point, they'll most likely resonate with your audience. And again, they'll be remembered.
And I'm seeing even more, as you say that, I've seen those stories as kind of like safe havens during your speech. Every time you land on the story, you feel good telling the story because you know it's familiar. And you'll notice that the audience also listens. They look better because they love hearing the story. So it's a confidence boost for you that you can now move on to the next challenge that you need to face along that journey of your speech.
Exactly. And when you tell a story well, again, not perfectly, but when you tell a story well, you'll notice the audience being engaged. They'll shake their head up and down. They'll smile. They'll lean in a little bit. And that builds your confidence. That's a huge confidence builder.
And Peter, I've heard some people say that they are most nervous just before they start speaking. Once they get started, they seem to feel better. So what advice do you have for people? What can they go through? What kind of exercise, what self-talk can they go through as they are preparing to start speaking?
There's various things they can do. And if you speak to speakers, they'll tell you all different things. Some go out running that morning, some exercise just before they walk on stage or out in the middle of the room. I pace back and forth. And even if I don't have much space, you give me 6 feet, I'll just keep pacing in that 6 feet. That's just so I get my energy where I want it to be. And it's really bringing it down, actually. And then as soon as I walk out, it comes right back up. I want my energy, but I want to get in control of my energy. So a lot of people say, I want to get rid of my nerves. And my thought is, no, you don't. You don't want to get rid of that feeling, because that's energy. What you're feeling is energy. That's an adrenaline rush, is your body, the fight or flight, right? Fight or flight, or fright. Some people are scared stiff. So that's your body getting you to do something important and exciting. And even running away from someone, it's not fun, but it's exciting to your body. So when you're doing something fun, like I have a client, she jumps out of perfectly good airplanes. She says, Peter, it's the same feeling as when I speak. Exactly. It's her body getting her ready, her mind getting her ready to do something exciting. So when you feel that energy, which you might label fear, label it excitement, because it's the same thing. So label it as excitement. Get a hold of that energy, harness that energy. And that's a pretty cool thing. Think about a torrent of water, a river just flowing. That could take you downstream, smash you against a rock, drown you. It could be a pretty horrible thing. Or it could be harnessed. Hundreds and hundreds of years ago, it was harnessed with a water wheel that created energy. And if it wasn't electricity, it still created energy to move a grinding wheel to grind wheat or whatever it might be. So take the energy. Make it what you want it to be, but don't try to get rid of it. So one thing I tell my clients, don't ever, ever try to get rid of that energy. An athlete who's going to play Major League Baseball for the first time is nervous. The day they lose that energy, now after they're there for a few years, that energy will just be called excitement. I'm up, two outs, two men on, we're down by one. That's excitement. The day that energy goes is the day when you hear athletes say, I woke up one day and knew it was the time to retire, because that feeling was gone. Or sometimes they stick around and they don't do well. And we look at them and go, yeah, I should have retired last year. So harness that. Find what works for you. Again, mind's pacing. People jump up and down on trampolines, little trampolines. You find all different things. And I talk to myself a lot.
And now I'm curious about that one, Peter. When you talk to yourself, is it positive self-talk, or is it questioning, or is it criticism?
Totally positive. This is going to be cool. I can't wait to see the people's faces. I can't wait to see them nodding their heads up and down in agreement. If I see someone who tilts their head a little bit, I'll know I confused them. How am I going to come back in and help them? And it's just positive talk. And it's really, this is going to be cool. Not what could go wrong. Oh my God, this could go wrong. That could go wrong. I'm a firm believer that what you picture in your head is pretty much what you're going to attract. So this is just going to be excellent. Again, let's go back to athletes. You hear them say, you know, Usain Bolt, the track star, possibly the greatest track star ever, at least in the 100 meter dash. he would say things like, I picture myself coming out of the blocks perfectly, or as close to as possible, gaining speed, catching up to the guy who got the better start than me, passing him and crossing the line first. He would see every part of, and it wasn't always perfect. It wasn't, I'll be in the lead, although he was most of the time, I'll be in the lead right out of the blocks. It was catching that guy who got a better start than me and passing him. He saw it all ahead of time. You hear a lot of athletes do that. Michael Jordan, he saw it long before he got that ball with 2 seconds left and down by one. He saw the ball going in the hoop. Visualize success.
Mm.
And that's what I do when I'm talking to myself.
And Peter, so let's imagine a person presenting in a business scenario, and perhaps it's the team leader who wants to get their team working together, feeling excited about this next project. Do you suggest that that leader visualize that end result that they want?
Yes, 100%. Why not visualize that success? Why not? I think a lot of times we just go in as routine. I'm supposed to go in and lead this meeting. George, have you ever been to a meeting where you walked out and thought to yourself, I will never, ever get that hour back in my life?
Oh, yes.
We all have, right?
Yep.
Because we came out the very same person as we went in an hour earlier. There was no transformation. Now, why should I hold a meeting and ask you people to show up and not transform you? Why do we have this meeting? If it's just informational, I could have sent that through an email with a PDF and you could have read it and saved yourself 56 minutes. So that's why people don't like meetings. But if someone in a business aspect can go in there and say, okay, we're going to have this Monday morning meeting, here's what I want them to walk away with so they can do their job better, so they can have more confidence, so they can meet their quota, whatever it might be. Well, now they're coming out transformed in some way. They're thinking different. They're doing different. They have more capabilities. They have more weapons to accomplish what they need to accomplish. That's a transformation. But if I go in there and I don't visualize any of this, I'm not even sure why we're having this other than every Monday morning at 9 o'clock, we have a meeting. Then that's when people wonder, why do we have a meeting every Monday morning at 9 o'clock? They're useless.
Peter, if people would like to know more about you and your programs, the best place to find you is?
PeterGeorgePublicSpeaking.com.
PeterGeorgePublicSpeaking.com, and you can find that link in the description below. Peter, as we prepare to wrap up, if you could sit down with a team leader who needs to lead their team, perhaps they have weekly or monthly meetings, if you could give them advice on how they can make those meetings more effective and how they can feel better about it themselves, and if it was one, two, or three pieces of advice, what might that be?
George, before anybody speaks, I believe they should know as much as they can about the audience, as much as it's necessary. And that includes people. We might say, hey, I've been the boss. These six people, eight people have been my employees for 3 years minimum. What more do I have to know about them? Well, this week they might be under stress. They might be afraid they're not meeting their quota. They might be going through a divorce. They might be different this week than they were last week. How do you want them to act or think or do? What do you want them to do when this is done? How do you want them to feel? We often forget about that. Do you want them to feel confident? Let's face it, if they're not hitting their numbers, do you want them to feel like they have a fire lit under their butt? How do you want them to feel? What do you want them to go do? Have all this in mind. And that's going back to that transformation. That's how you're going to make a difference in their lives. You'll feel better about yourself because you know you did something constructive as opposed to just hold that Monday morning meeting. And things in your business, in your self-confidence, and in your life will just feel better. You'll feel better about yourself. They'll feel better about you, and you'll feel better about your entire organization, or at least at the part in which you're involved.
Solid advice. My guest today is Peter George, reminding you that when it comes to public speaking, it's all about the audience.
If you like what you heard, tell your friends and post your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, because that helps more listeners find us. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.